This is Barry Tyker of the Oral History Project. Today is March 23rd, 1994. I'm in the Red Gym. I'm interviewing Jim Bartelt, who was a student here at the university in the years immediately following World War II. Jim, let's start out talking a little bit about your childhood, your early schooling, teachers or people within your family who had influenced who influenced your education.
Well, I was born in Wausau. Our home was in a tiny little place called Marathon, which is 10 miles west of Wausau, where my father was a rural mail carrier. He had been a member of the school board, and my mother was a teacher at one time in a one-room school, and I suppose that they were the greatest influences on my education. It was expected that you would do well in high school, and I think I did. Although there were handicaps at that time, the high school was a very small one, and of course the war was going on, and a lot of important things were dropped, sciences and mathematics and that sort of thing.
Why were they dropped?
Because teachers were going into the service, and this was a very small place.
Is this Marathon High School?
Yes, that's right.
How did you end up in the military in World War II?
Well, actually, I had passed what was called an ASTP test at that time to enter a college program, which was abolished about the time that my number came up, so I was sort of a volunteer draftee, and I wound up in something called Radio Intelligence, which was a company that, it did two things. It copied Japanese radio traffic and sought to ascertain where the stations were located. We did that in Hawaii and on Okinawa.
Where were you? What were you involved in when the war ended? Were you on the way to Japan with a lot of?
Well, we were on Okinawa, and of course, the invasion of Japan was planned for September, and of course, the atomic bomb was dropped at the early part of August.
What were your feelings about the invasion of Japan, and how did you feel when you heard about the atomic bomb?
Well, there was a great sense of relief. Almost celebration, I think, and it's interesting to think about that. I do that from time to time in view of younger people who say that the bomb should never have been used.
When the war ended, how did you come back to the United States immediately then, and how are you?
No, we were sent to South Korea, and we were there for 3 or 4 months, and in December, some of us we flew to Kyoto, Japan, to join our mother unit, which was running out of people because of people returning to the States, and I left Japan at the end of April and was discharged here at Camp McCoy, Wisconsin, in May.
And did you go back to Marathon at that point?
Yes, I did. I had had I'd worked from time to time at a small radio station in Medford, Wisconsin, and I went back there very briefly and found that being a radio disc jockey, which was once exciting, was now a very dull thing. So that led to my coming to Madison and being very excited about, people were very helpful, and I found out that there was a radio journalism specialty in the School of Journalism, and that's when I decided to come to school.
So you found out about that specialty before you came to Madison, or did you?
About that. I think probably after I came and got the catalogs and all that sort of thing.
Okay, you moved into Madison, started attending the university at a very interesting point in its history. the university was literally being flooded with returning veterans, and one of the problems that many people faced, who I've talked to over the years, has been housing. What was the housing situation like how did you face that situation?
Well, my friend and I, Bill Odie, who became a pharmacist, went back home and waited for the mail to come, and when it did, we found out that we were assigned to housing in the barracks at Truax Field.
Bill, so you went through the regular housing bureau,
yeah,
this is where you ended up, as single males. Yeah.
Men's housing, or whatever it was called. Bill was in, what had been the hospital, or at least a large barracks, and then they, either the military or the university had taken over sort of warehouse-like buildings and divided them into rooms for two or four people, and that's where I wound up.
What was life like in Truax?
Well, it was a different form of regimentation, I suppose.
Yeah, you can compare this to something because you had just gotten out of the military.
My recollection is there wasn't much social life, of course. One got up and got on they had typical yellow school buses. So you got on the bus and they came down and parked the buses down here at the Memorial Union. And we spent a lot of time in the Union, I think, between classes and so forth. And at the end of the day, you got on the bus and you went back to Truax.
Did they have any kind of library or study place set up at Truax or anything like that, or did you just go back to
Well, I'm not sure they did or did not, but in my case, I went back to my room, and there wasn't much else to do besides study, and as a matter of fact, I got straight A's the first semester, and never again.
Did you eat out at Truax? Did they have a mess out there, or...?
My recollection is they did have a mess hall, and that the food was not very good.
How long did you end up living at Truax?
Well, I only lived there one semester. The way the men's hall program worked, and I suspect a lot of people washed out of school after one semester, realizing it was not the thing that they were suited for. So you sort of went on to the next best thing, which in this case was the rooms they had at Camp Randall. There were two houses out there, Bauman House and Trainer House. I was in Trainer House. They were named for football players who were lost, both on Okinawa,
both
I think.
On Okinawa, yes, you're right.
I was in Trainer House, and that was a room with two double-deck bunks and four people.
Oh, really? Was it any bigger than the Truax rooms?
The rooms weren't very big, no.
Was the advantage primarily that it was on campus?
That's right.
As opposed to?
Mm-hmm.
And how long did you end up staying there?
Well, I stayed there one semester, and then, as I had mentioned, the summer semester came along, and I wound up at Gilman House in Cronsage. And then when the fall semester came, I wound up in Conover House in Cronsage, and that's where I stayed the rest of my time here.
Going back to the first two places you lived here on campus, Truax and Trainer House, was there anybody in charge of those places? Did they have anything comparable to the house fellow system of the dormitories?
I don't believe so. I don't recollect that there was anybody like a resident house fellow or anything like that.
So you were pretty much on your own. Mm-hmm. Did you have any problems with discipline or rowdiness or anything like that? That you can recall?
I don't recall any problems, Barry. I think that all generalizations are dangerous, including this one, but I think there was a very serious group of persons who were mistakenly so, perhaps, but were very concerned about that they were old and they had to make up the years.
You know, I've heard that comment from other veterans too, saying that there was a real serious nature. There was a let's get to work and get our degree and get on with life attitude. So this is something that you would say you saw.
Yes, I think that was a very common attitude. And, in retrospect, it seems mistaken, you know, that you're saying, gee, I'm 24 years old and I ought to have a job, I ought to be working.
You did live in the dorms then. They had the house fellow system in effect there. Could you talk a little bit about the house fellow system and who your house fellow was, how that worked?
Well, my house fellow most of that time was David Cronin, who you mentioned in connection with this project. My recollection, a very, very serious fellow, a person who did an awful lot of studying in his room, and I don't think that he had any particular disciplinary problems. Mm-hmm. I recall only one thing that happened to me, that a bunch of us were getting a little too noisy and rowdy in the shower one night, and he came in and told us to pipe down.
So you stayed in the dorms for the rest of your
career. That's right.
Career. Mm-hmm. Did you have you eat at Van Hise? Is that where you had your...
No, Kronsage has a dining room in the basement of Kronsage.
Were they mainly veterans that were living out in the dorms at that point in time?
I would say, yeah.
80%. 80%. Mm-hmm. Did veterans mainly hang around with other veterans, or did they...
I think that's true. Of course, most people were veterans.
That's true. That's true also. Touché. You talked about looking through the course pamphlets when you first came here and seeing radio journalism.
That's right.
Talk a little bit about that course of study here at the university, your pursuit of that degree. Any particular teachers or classes of note?
Yeah, I think the main teacher in radio journalism is still here, Bob Taylor. And that was a course of study involving textbooks and writing style, but also a very practical thing he had worked out, that you went one or two afternoons or evenings a week to one of the commercial radio stations in town, in my case the WIBA, and helped out with this, helped prepare the 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock news.
Sort of an apprentice type.
Yeah, an internship sort of thing. Mainly with the writing and a little bit of reporting, going to City Hall and that sort of thing.
Did you go on the air at all in that?
Not in that period, no. Yeah.
So the course, were there other courses like that as well, where there was a certain amount of on-the-job training kind of thing?
Yes, and in sophomore reporting, you did the same sort of thing for a newspaper.
Let's get to your graduation a little bit later on. What was your minor in?
Well, I didn't have a minor per se, but my field of interest were history and political science.
Any memorable courses that you can remember, or professors?
Well, I had Fred Harvey Harrington for American history, and I found him to be a fascinating person. And over the years, of course, we had contact from time to time. When I was a reporter here, and he was president of the university of the system.
How was he as a teacher?
Excellent teacher, excellent lecturer.
Excellent lecturer.
I see he would be, his pacing up and down on the stage at Bascom Hall with no notes and lecturing.
So essentially from memory or just creating, I've heard other people say that he did that quite well. After World War II, one of the things about an exploding university was a shortage of classroom space. There was a real room shortage here. I remember in the note you wrote to me, you mentioned that a class of yours was held in the First Congregational Church.
That's right. It was the introduction to political science, and the professor's name was Stokes, I think Thomas. And I have one recollection of that place, of that course, when time came for 6 or 8 weeks exams, the student body was sitting in the pews, and the graduate students passed out the examination, and he got up in the pulpit, Professor Stokes said, and I realize, he said, that there's a great temptation under these circumstances for cheating, but if you have that temptation, please remember where you are.
What served as the library? Did you have where did you do your studying or get your books?
Well, the library was in what is now the reading room of the State Historical Society on the second floor.
Was that adequate space at that time, do you recall?
I don't think it was adequate.
Were there any other classes or professors out of your major or minor field that you remember with particular fondness or the opposite?
Well, I remember, I think, in the journalism school, probably my favorite professor was Bruce Westley. I think he went on to become head of the journalism department at the University of Kentucky. I'm not sure that that's true. But he had experience as a working newspaper man, which was very evident in some of the his courses were very practical. I think one of the things that stuck with me over the years that he said, a rather obvious thing, that when you you're on the bus going back to the office or walking from the Capitol back to my office here in Madison, that don't just walk, you know. Write the story in your head so when you get back, you can sit down and type it out. Very good advice.
Did you do a lot of journalism? Were you not involved with the Cardinal or anything in that capacity?
Once in a while, I'd work for the Cardinal. I was for 2 years the sports editor of something called The Spectator, which was a weekly paper in the men's halls. It wasn't a very imaginative job, although I had a small column, but the main purpose of the sport page was to report the standings and scores of the games between the houses. And as a matter of fact, I came to this building, to the athletic offices here, once or twice a week to get that information.
That was a little later on in the interview, but let's bring it in now. Let's talk about intramurals out in the dorms. Was that a big deal out there? I mean, was that something that people were really involved in?
Yeah, I think it was. There was basketball and touch football. Softball was a big thing.
Was it divided by halls within dorms?
Yeah, see. Conover House would play Showerman House and so forth.
Did they have championships and things like that?
Well, there was a win and won and lost standing, so there were championships in that regard, in that sense.
Were you involved in any of the teams, or mainly were you doing the editing for the Spectator?
Well, I played a little bit of softball, and my career came to an end in that summer semester one Sunday afternoon when I was playing second base, and the thing that happens between innings, as you know, is one ball is used for infield practice, and when the pitcher finishes warming up with the catcher, he throws the ball to second base, which he did, and hit me right in the head, right in the face, and broke my glasses. And I somehow lost my zest for athletics after that.
You mentioned, we talked about this before the interview started, the semesters were consecutive. There were three semesters a year. So you started in the fall of 46, would that be right?
That's right.
And then you went through the spring of 47, and you went consecutively through the summer. Now, was that set up primarily, something set up primarily for the returning, the rush of
that
people?
That was supposed to be an opportunity for veterans to catch up.
So these were regular semesters, they weren't like summer courses?
No, there was also a summer school of 6 or 8 weeks, but this was like for 15.
This was in addition, separate from. Did most veterans follow that same, I know you can't speak for them, but did it seem like that was a fairly common path to travel?
Not all did, I suppose, but the men's halls were filled. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So school was really a 12-month operation?
At that time, yeah.
And you graduated when? In
spring, of June of 49.
So you did it all in 3 years?
Yes.
Yeah. In terms of the financing of your education, did you come on the GI Bill?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how much of your schooling did that pay for?
Well, we got $75 a month, and that, if you were careful. And, well, of course, we got books and supplies and tuition, but $75 a month in cash. And if you were careful, that was sufficient. So with what, in my case, I'd been in the Pacific during the time when we, after we left Hawaii in the winter of 45, weren't paid, couldn't be paid under the circumstances for some, you know, 10 months or so. So there was a little money that had been put aside because I never had it.
Had the GI Bill not kicked in after the war, would you have been able to attend the university, do you think?
I would have been able, I think, but I probably wouldn't. It would have been probably too financially difficult.
And what you can recall with your friends and your buddies, was that, how did they feel about that? Was the GI Bill something that really permitted them to do something they might not otherwise have done? Do you recall any discussion?
Well, I think that's very true, and particularly in retrospect, I stayed very close over the years with a man from Conover House who became a vice president and trust officer at the First National Bank of St. Paul. And he was a little older than I am, and often makes the comment that he had a job when he was drafted into the Army in Wausau as a lens grinder. And he often makes the comment that if it hadn't been for the war and the GI Bill, that would have been his lifelong job, probably, grinding lenses, instead of being a banker and a very wealthy person, as it turns out.
Do you recall when you found out about the GI Bill existing?
I think that summer, I could be wrong about this, but I think the Army didn't do a very good job about that. You know, like in the discharge centers, they could have passed on that information.
I remember reading somewhere that they were very surprised at the number of people who took advantage of the GI Bill. I don't think they were expecting quite that many. Getting back to your course of instruction now, let's just finish up with that before we move on to the next category here. How would you rate the quality of instruction you received at the university?
I'd rate it as good to top notch. At one time, I'm a little fuzzy on the details, but there was something which was called a revolt in the journalism school by returning veterans. I think that the criticism was that it was too old-fashioned and probably didn't move fast enough, and I think that's one criticism I would have of the journalism school at that time. There was not enough emphasis on having to work under deadline pressure. My first job after graduation was for a radio station newsroom of the station owned by the Green Bay Press Gazette, and it had 5-minute newscasts every hour with 15-minute newscasts at 7:30, 12:30, and 6, as I recall. And the first months there were very difficult because I didn't have the skills to work under that sort of pressure.
That would be interesting to see. Did the journalism school acknowledge that criticism? Did they do any, do you recall anything being done to change it or to at least deal with it?
Well, I think they acknowledged that there was a man called Henry Ladd Smith, I think, who, mm-hmm. who was called in from the University of Washington to be sort of an interim director or something like that to meet some of those criticisms.
Oh, so that was as a result of the criticism?
I think, at that time.
Let's change the subject for a little bit and talk about clubs and organizations. In the 1949 Badger, I believe, it notes that you were involved with WHA. What did you do with WHA?
Well, I was there not very long. I worked in the, I'm not sure whether I went there as a volunteer or as an intern from the journalism school. The job consisted of helping to prepare newscasts, like I think at 6 o'clock. At that time, WHA, contrary to now, was what we called in radio a rip and read operation. That is to say, people ripped a copy off the teletype and went in and sat down and read it. So I think I lost interest in the operation for that reason.
What about any other clubs and organizations on campus, the Hoofers or anything like that? You mentioned that you were sports editor of the dorm hall sports page. Anything else besides that that you can recall?
No, I can't recall any formal clubs. I was initiated into Sigma Delta Chi, the professional journalism fraternity. But socially, I don't think too many of us were in formal clubs, of social clubs.
So you were more interested in getting on with the schooling, the business?
I think that was the thrust. Yeah.
What about the journalism fraternity? What criteria were used to elect you to that?
Well, I think there were two things, an interest in going into journalism professionally, and also grades were taken into account. I don't recall the formal why I was invited to join. Those were the two criteria.
Were there dinners or meetings, or was it just the
story? Well, they had meetings of, and they'd have a speaker down here at the Quonset Huts in front of the library, I remember, was the meeting place. A variety of speakers, including one night Roundy Coughlin, the well-known sports columnist from the State Journal.
Let's talk about Roundy for a second. He was pretty much just leaving when I came onto the Madison scene. So he was a local celebrity at that point.
Yeah, there is a, at least the State Journal has done some years ago, a biography about him. He was just a character that contrasted with Madison as being an intellectual place, that he wrote in sentences that weren't really sentences. He had a very good secretary, apparently, who cleaned all those things up. But he was also quite an expert on sports, and an expert on people, and expert on humor. So he was very well read.
As a speaker, how was he as a speaker? You recall?
Well, I think he was a lousy speaker. He would make a point, and then he would end sentences after he'd made a point by going like that. And he talked about in his column and in person about what a great freeloader he was at the Park Hotel bar and dining room. I think a lot of that was fiction, but it was part of the character that he created.
Part of the myth and persona. That's interesting. He wrote for a long time, didn't he?
Yes.
Decades. Mm-hmm. Did you get to know him personally or throughout?
Not well, I guess. We'd see him from time to time.
What about Let's talk about the Daily Cardinal. What kind of a student newspaper was it when you were attending school from your point of view?
Well, I think it was a very good paper, very professional. I suppose now when you get to be of my age, you think that maybe the Daily Cardinal isn't a very good paper anymore, that it's more of a advocacy mm-hmm. journal. I don't recall the Daily Cardinal being that subjective. The was a a time, I think, that the Cardinal probably went overboard with its criticism of Harry Stuhldreher, the coach, and probably got a little too subjective at that time. Remember, there was a series of articles by an anonymous, supposedly anonymous black athlete that accused Stuhldreher of not giving blacks a chance.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. You said supposedly. Did people ever learn what the actual story was on that? Okay, well, that's one secret. We can just leave as a secret. Can you say something? Were there any special publications that were geared more or less to veterans on campus?
I don't think so. Not that I can recall.
So the veterans just read the same mm-hmm. materials that that everyone else read. Leisure time. You spent time at Memorial Union, you said, when you were out at Truax. Did that continue pretty much? Was that the meeting place for?
I, in my case, spent less time after I left Truax and left Camp Randall. Of course, we had better rooms in mm-hmm. and a day room, if that's what it was called, sort of a lounge or living room on every floor of the dormitory. So one tended to spend his leisure time there.
Did you spend much time in the Rathskeller?
Oh, yes.
Was that all men's after the war? Do you remember?
I can't remember when that changed. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was right around that time.
I think, I can remember going there with a date shortly after I came to Madison. So it must have been open to women at that time, which would have been that fall.
Yeah. So you don't remember anything in the papers making a big deal out there?
No.
When you went out to restaurants in town and you didn't eat out the dorm or wherever, what were some of the favorite spots in town for you and maybe for other veterans and for other veterans?
Well, in my case, there really wasn't too much of that. I think that the procedure in the dormitories was that there was a dinner on Sunday noon and no evening meal, so you'd go out most every Sunday to no particular place on University Avenue. Mm-hmm. I remember something called the Hasty Tasty and the Badger Tavern.
What about hangouts? When you went out for a beer with your pals on Friday night after the big exams and stuff, were there any hangouts in town that you went to?
Well, the Badger Tavern was sort of the men's hall's place, as opposed to the State Street places were sort of Langdon Street places, and that was sort of a division. There was a place I was trying to remember. Going through your questions, there was a place out on what was then the edge of town on University Avenue where they served beer and pitchers. And I remember that we had one of those pitchers, and over the course of a semester, our group of people would put their change in that pitcher. And when all the exams were finished, we took that pitcher filled with coins out to this tavern and cashed it in.
Where was the edge of town at that point?
Where the Cuba Club is?
Was.
Was.
Yeah. Way out there. What about movie houses? Are there any of those? Were there any of those that you went to a lot, or did you do mainly union things?
Well, you'd go to the Orpheum and the Capitol, which is now the Civic Center. I think those were probably the two places you went the most.
Did you go to Harrisfoot or any of those types of
yes.
activities? Mm-hmm. What shape was Harrisfoot in after the war? Was it still pretty popular?
Yeah, it was. In fact, I think that it was still a traveling show. Went to Chicago. And I know after I graduated the first few months, and I was with the paper in Green Bay, they came to perform in Green Bay, which was, I took a young lady who's now my wife to see that show, and she was sort of mystified. She comes from, she graduated from Michigan State.
They didn't have Harrisfoot at Michigan
Apparently
State.
Apparently not.
I've interviewed Fannie Taylor, and she talks about how Harrisfoot eventually disbanded because it became kind of a parody of itself, and it had sort of used up its time. Was any of that beginning to come into evidence at that point, or was it still just a real good, legitimate theater show?
I think it was pretty good. So this could have happened, you know, after the 1950s or sometime.
Yeah, I think it happened mid to late 50s, as I recall. I might be wrong about that. What about dating? Did you meet your wife here at Madison?
No.
Where would you go on a date?
Well, you'd go to the two movie theaters that I mentioned. And I'd probably stop at the Rathskeller afterwards. One young woman that I met from Chadburn, it turned out to be a very, very emotional boxing fan. Mm. And as you recall, boxing was still a big thing at the university at that time. And it filled that field house with 14,000 people. And in fact, I think that the national tournament was there, like in 48 or 49.
So were these boxing matches, were they like basketball games, a lot of yelling and a lot of emotion?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any particular boxers that stand out in your mind?
Well, there was a man that I met subsequently. He became a parole agent. He was from Madison. His name was Vito Parisi. And during that national tournament, the first string heavyweight became ill or was injured or something to that effect. And so Vito, who came from what was called at that time Spaghetti Corners region at Park,
Greenbush,
was called upon to be the substitute, and he fought a heavily favored person from the University of Miami, beautiful suntanned body. His name was Art Say, and he won the fight. And of course, there was a great celebration that night at Spaghetti Corners. And the next year, the Cardinal was doing an advance piece on the prospects for the boxing team, and they called up Vito and said, "Well, what do you think about the coming boxing season?" And he said, "Well, I'm not going out for boxing." And they said, "You're not." And he said, "No, why should I? I'm the champion."
Go out when you're on top. Was this a popular place to take dates? A lot of people go, was it sort of like just going to a football game? Or?
I think so.
Was there talk in those times about boxing being brutal or anything
Oh,
like
no,
that?
No, no, no.
We talked a little bit about intramural sports already. Let's talk about religion on campus for a while. Did you practice religion when you were at the UW?
Hardly at all. I think that I suppose you've sort of fallen away from it during your years in service. And there were active things that I was aware of, like at the Wesley Methodist Church. I went to a couple of their Sunday night suppers, but I never got involved, really.
What about politics? Was that an issue on campus right after the war? Were you involved in that as a reporter or as a student in any way?
Well, I remember being quite an advocate for Harry Truman. Mm-hmm. But I'm not aware of any issues that divided the campus, sort of artificial things like the Greeks versus the Independents, mm-hmm. as to who would be elected. It's really all not that important, as it turns out.
Was Harry popular? Let's get to Truman for a second. Was he the popular choice on campus at that point?
I think there was probably quite a division. Of course, he was the underdog, and people not inclined to be for an underdog. So it was quite a surprise. It probably shouldn't have been, as in retrospect, because I remember the Capital Times pointing out that it had been taking straw votes in the elementary schools in Madison and that Harry Truman was winning, but everybody sort of laughed that off. Even that the famous Dewey beats Truman
Chicago
Tribune was here on the campus that morning, and some entrepreneurial students were selling them for $2 a piece, and I wish now that I would have bought one.
That's great. What about student attitudes toward alcohol, let's say? What was it? Beer was an accepted thing?
I think so. It was just something some people, maybe most people, did on Saturdays. So there wasn't any condemnation of it either.
Was it mainly beer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about drugs? Was there any talk?
No talk or knowledge of drugs.
We mentioned athletics. I see you have a copy. I hadn't noticed this before. If you're a dorm spectator, here. Can I maybe borrow this and make a Xerox?
Sure.
For the files? Great. Well, there will be a Xerox of the Spectator from November 4th, 1948, in Jim's file here in the Oral History Project for anyone who wants to hear about how the men's halls prepared for homecoming in 1948. Athletics. Let's talk about athletics during your years on campus. You mentioned some about boxing, and you talked a little bit about the coach. Let's talk about the football team for a while. How were they doing during the late 1940s?
Well, they weren't doing very well, and I think there was a different sort of student body, I suppose, of older males who probably, because of their military experience, were not very happy with losing. It wasn't a very good period in Wisconsin history. I don't mean athletically. I mean on the conduct of the students. I mentioned the Daily Cardinal being very harsh with Harry Stuhldreher. One of the things I can remember in a stadium at the games was the students, mainly males, singing a song. Goodbye, Harry. Goodbye, Harry. We're glad to see you go, was the way the song ended. And, of course, he did resign then as football coach at the end of one of those seasons, 47 or 48.
Who replaced him? Do you remember?
Ivy Williamson.
What does he? Did he get a little bit of a honeymoon there with the students?
Yeah, I was looking through the Badger yesterday, before coming here, and his first season, he was 2 wins and 10 losses or something like that, so he really didn't do much better than Harry Stuhldreher, but of course he did subsequently.
Wasn't that Barry Alvarez's record in his first
year, right.
Something like
that's
that?
That's right.
A little parallel there. So the teams, I assume, were not very good.
Well, the basketball team was, of course, now that they recently, with this experience of this year's team, and pointed out that was the first time since when? 1946?
47,
yeah. So there was a great interest in basketball.
Who was the men's basketball coach?
Bud Foster.
Who were the main competitors to UW in those days?
Big Ten teams.
Michigan, the usual rivals?
Yeah, Michigan, Ohio State in football, and there was a great rivalry between Wisconsin and Iowa in basketball. I remember vaguely there had been some pushing incident or something at Iowa City, and when they came to play here, they did increase the police force at the stadium. There was no incident, but there was tension.
So Wisconsin has had its history of rowdy crowds before the terrible incident that took place this last football season. What about hockey? Was hockey a sport at that point?
No, it wasn't, and I have a humorous recollection of that. I was mentioning coming to this building to get scores and information, and one of the people I talked to was had been a hockey coach, and he kept saying to me that, you know, what this school really needs is hockey, and I'd say it would never go, it would never work.
Which was football the biggest sport?
Football and basketball.
And boxing, sort of right behind, not too far behind. What about any of the minor sports, track and field, wrestling, any of those? That you can recall much about?
They were all there. I don't think they were followed particularly by the mass of students. If you had an interest, I remember Don Gehrman was a very famous runner.
Yes, I've heard of him.
Yeah. Came close to a 4-minute mile.
Who were the big football players at that point? Do you recall during your?
Oh, I really couldn't be much help without looking up.
No, that's okay. Something pops out. What about basketball? Do you recall anything there?
Well, there was an all Big Ten forward, I think he was all Big Ten, Don Cook. It's the only name that comes to mind.
Moving on, I have a section called discrimination versus inclusion. You were a veteran. Let's look at it from that angle. Was there any? Did veterans have any problems with any discrimination toward them during their years here? Of course, there were so many of you.
No,
I dare anyone to discriminate. But
it would probably be the other way around. I think the veterans were sort of in charge, not physically, but the majority of students, of male students.
What about discrimination against women or Jews or? Blacks who were first making their presence felt on the campus after the war, many because of the GI Bill, I believe.
Well, I've thought about that question from your outline. My own recollection is that I only knew one black student in that summer school, I mean closely, and I did have a black TA for some sort of English composition class that summer. So I really had no experience. I think there was a stereotype about Jewish students that the stereotype was that they were wealthy and they came from the East. But I don't recall that there was any acts of discrimination, or it was just maybe a discrimination of a stereotype.
So it really wasn't much of an issue.
No, I don't
discussed
recall.
About at the time. Scott Goodnight had been dean of men for many, many decades before the end of the war. I think he stepped out right around the time you were coming home. Did you have any involvement with the dean of men during your years on campus?
Not formally. Mm-hmm.
He wasn't someone who you talked about a lot in your...
Well, you know, you read his name and the papers and that sort of thing, but I didn't have any contact with him personally.
What about President Fred? Did you ever have any opportunity to meet him?
Yes. When he became president, he, of course, had been head of the School College of Agriculture, which has a residence down there next to the men's halls. And when he became president, he refused to move. So we'd see quite a bit of him in an informal way. I think he was highly respected as a intelligent person in a very difficult time with facing the growth of the university, but also regarded as a very modest person.
Did you ever get to meet Mrs. Fred since
No.
you were out that she
No.
was out that way with him? What about any campus personalities? You mentioned a local personality before with Roundy in the Sports Wisconsin State Journal. But what about campus area personalities? Do any of them come to mind?
No, I really can't. There was a man called Snowball, I guess, and I don't remember whether he was black or not, but he did have white hair, and he... He sold papers here at on Park Street. He was quite a fixture in all sorts of weather.
When you graduated from the UW, what were your career goals at that point?
Well, my career goal was to go into radio news, which I did. I worked for 3 or 4 years at a WJPG in Green Bay, which was owned by the Green Bay Press Gazette. And I enjoyed the work, but I gradually realized that what I was really interested in was politics and government, and there was no chance to specialize at that level in radio. So when the so-called City Hall beat became open on the Press Gazette, I moved there.
Mm. So you stayed in journalism then for the rest of your career?
Yes, I stayed on the City Hall political beat and subsequently became an editorial writer. And in 1979, I came back to Madison as the correspondent here for the Green Bay Press Gazette.
And how long did you remain in that position?
Till I retired in 1989.
I asked you before to rate the quality of instruction at the university, and we talked about that. Reflecting back, how would you rate your whole experience here as an undergraduate at the University of Wisconsin?
Oh, it was a good experience, and it was a time of, as you suggested, of goal-oriented students, at least the males, and a goal of catching up and making up for lost years and getting out and getting a job. And along the way, made some very good friends who we are still close to. We have an annual football weekend reunion of a group of individuals from Conover House.
Did you watch the Rose Bowl this year?
Yes, I sure did.
You live to tell about it?
I wish I'd gone, but we had a trip planned in mid-January to Panama, so it seemed a little like gilding the lily to make both trips. And I suspect that if you watched it on television, you saw a lot more than if you were there.
Do you have any additional comments or observations about anything we've talked about or haven't talked about?
Yeah, I wanted to mention one thing that probably would be of interest to David Cronin. it's sort of under the heading of politics, but at that time there was something called Dorm-Sylvania, and it was presided over a student who was elected. He was called the Dorm Duke, and the campaign consisted of humor and stunts and that sort of thing. And in our case, I had the rather brilliant idea that there was a Conover modeling agency in New York, which I wrote to and asked, explained what, why I was writing, and got back a huge stack of autographed pictures of models with the suggestion that they were endorsing our candidate, whose name was Don Prane. Seemed like a very good idea, except that that the pictures we posted around the men's halls were torn down, probably for pinup pictures. And one night, some of our people from Conover House were drinking beer on State Street and walking back over the hill at Bascom Hall, and there was a lot of construction going on at that time, and somebody had the brilliant idea about, wouldn't it be fun to take some of this wet plaster and plaster Abraham Lincoln, which they proceeded to do. And about that time, the campus cop, his name was Joe Hammersley, came up the drive in his squad car and saw what was happening, and these individuals started running back towards the dorms, leading Joe to Conover House. And the idea came around that, well, this was part of the campaign for Dorm Duke on the part of Conover House, so that ended disastrously. I think out of seven candidates, we were seventh.
Well, you just mentioned one of the real campus characters that I've had several people tell me about, and that's Joe Hammersley. Can you tell me anything more about Joe? Any other Joe stories?
Oh, that was the only personal relationship I had. He was, as you suggest, was widely recognized as a well-known campus figure, and somebody who some individuals would try to pull something off against him. That particular night, he came back to Conover after he had been led there by these students, and said that if we'd get up there and scrub off Abe Lincoln by daybreak, all would be forgiven. So some of us did go up there and tried to scrub off Abe Lincoln as well as we could, but Joe had also called up the newspapers, who came out in the morning to take pictures.
What a dirty dog. Anything else you'd like to?
I don't think so, Barry.
Okay, well, then we will end this interview.